The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You are listening to the Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Red Sox offense stays hot. They win two in a row against the Diamondbacks. Tonight, winning 9-4 behind a series of home runs and good small hitting and everything else in between. Ranger Suarez, a little bit shaky, but still does enough for the Red Sox to get the win. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Doug and Juan. Guys, this has been what we needed, right? After that Pittsburgh series, offense kind of let you down. A lot of people are starting to wonder, is the offense going back to what it was earlier in the season? And then there were worries about the pitching staff and sort of, is that going to start to regress now? Because I think we can all agree, if this team doesn't pitch, they're not going very far. But overall, Ranger Suarez tonight, not his sharpest outing, gave up a grand slam there. But honestly, that seemed to be really the only mistake. So, Doug, I'll put you in the leadoff spot here. What'd you see from Ranger Suarez tonight?
Yeah, he came in, like you said, he's been a little shaky coming in the last few starts. But other than, that grand slam was just, that was all he gave up. He had one bad inning, what was it, the fourth they hit that? Or, so he had one bad inning where he wasn't finding his spot. He had the walk before, but, he buckled down and what we needed him to do and go a little bit deeper and went into the sixth this time, got the first out and threw over 90 pitches. So I like to see that. I like to see, he's not himself. I think we can say he's not who he was the first half of the season before the injury. He's definitely finding his way since the injury, but I think we've seen him a little better each time. And yeah, the grand slam was a bomb and it was a bad inning. But other than that, he pitched pretty well. He had some nice strikeouts. He had some nice curveballs and, I'm happy with it. He put us in, four runs is kind of that borderline spot that, put you in a position to win. But with the offense, we had tonight, he helped, he put us in a position that we could take the game.
Yeah, one of the things I'm looking at with Ranger Suarez is the pitch count. I'm glad you brought that up, Dougie, because I know that one of the things that I've seen, at least from him, is he's not himself, right? He's still trying to figure out, trying to get himself to where, we want Ranger Suarez to be. And the pitch count is always going to be an indicator of where he's at in the process. You look at what he did against the Blue Jays. I think he threw 80 pitches against the Blue Jays, only allowed one run. Yeah, they lost that game, but it wasn't necessarily because of him. It was because of lack of offense, and then the bullpen kind of imploded at the end. And then, tonight he goes out there and throws 93 pitches, I think he threw. And only allowed, as you mentioned, that grand slam, which was the one mistake that he made. I have trust in Ranger Suarez. And unfortunately, we're at the point where we are going to have to trust Ranger Suarez. We don't necessarily have a choice here, right? Because there's three guys that we're going to have to rely heavily on. Is Ranger Suarez, is Peyton Tolley, and it's Sonny Gray. Those are the three guys that are going to have to carry us into the playoffs, depending on how Garrett Crochet comes back. And we saw the news that, he can't pitch more than two innings. So we're not going to get much from him anyway. So I'm liking what I'm seeing from him, building up the innings, the pitches. And today was a step in the right direction. And of course, the team won. So you can't really complain much outside of that grand slam.
Yeah. And even the inning that set up the grand slam, it was a lot of soft contact. It's not like he was getting, ripped apart. I mean, I think in the later inning, he gave up, a sharp ground ball that went, under Caleb Durbin's legs. But apart from that, he wasn't getting hit hard. And that is kind of vintage Ranger Suarez. That's his whole game. right? He's not going to blow you away with velocity, but he's going to pitch, you know, around the corners. He's going to throw a lot of strikes and he's going to produce weak contact. It's just that he made a real bad mistake to a good power hitter, right? Moreno's got a lot of power in that bat. He always has. So you throw a two seamer right down the middle. I mean, so a lot of guys are going to jump on that. So yeah, he made one mistake and, you know, unfortunately it was a big one. It put you down 4-3 at the time, but luckily it was not game breaking. You know, luckily the Red Sox got off to a fast start against Merrill Kelly, as they should. And it didn't come back and bite you. You know, looking at the pitch count, you guys are right. 93 pitches through, you know, 5 1/3. I'll take that any day. And 63 of them were strikes. So literally he's throwing strikes 67% of the time. That's who Ranger Suarez is when he's on. So
yeah,
like the grand slam, it sucked to see that. And you kind of, it's a little bit deflating after the Red Sox got up to that early lead. You go, oh, geez, here we go. But I still trust Ranger Suarez in a playoff series. And, you know, Doug, you mentioned it, like, that's probably going to be your rotation. You know, you go into a playoff series, it's three-man rotations. It's Gray, it's Tolley, and it's Suarez, in whatever order you want to do that. Because the reports on Crochet are not very encouraging. I don't want to see Patrick Sandoval anywhere near a playoff game. I don't want to see the Bayo opener thing anywhere near a playoff game. So you're going to need this guy down the stretch, because more than likely you're going to be playing playoff games in October. So if this is sort of him like sorting himself out and getting to that point where he can deliver you a really good playoff performance, then I'm okay with it not being the prettiest outing as long as the Red Sox win.
Yeah, I think the trust is definitely still there. He's you know, he's not finding his, he's not pitching his best to the ability, but everyone still trusts him when he takes the mound. I think the team trusts him, the offense trusts him, and I think we would definitely trust him in a playoff setting. He's proven it before. You know, he's been a pretty good playoff performer in his career, so I don't think there's too much to worry about. I think I'd like to see him maybe take 93 pitches into the seventh instead of into the sixth. You know, maybe he can, you know, start to get that down a little bit, and if he can do that by the end of the year, then I think we feel really good about that three man. And, you know, if you had to go the fourth, you know, maybe you go Bennett, but that three man looks real good. And, you know, I think Rangers just finding his way still. And I think by the end of the year, he'll maybe not be fully what he was, but he'll be better than he is now.
Yeah, I think the Red Sox really do want to solidify that three man rotation. Yeah. And I know, Jason, you mentioned not wanting Bayo anywhere near a playoff game. But, hey, bullpen Bayo is a different story, and we could talk more about it. There are stats that are kind of blowing me out of the water, man, with how the way that he's bounced back since they brought him back up to the majors. He's arguably the best bullpen arm in Major League Baseball. That's how good he's been. But I think the Red Sox are focusing on trying to solidify that three-man rotation. And a performance like this, I mean, come on, it's boosting confidence here. And the good thing about Ranger Suarez is not the type of pitcher that, you know, it's going to blow you out of the water with speed. No, he's so like strategic with the way that he pitches. He loves to pinpoint pitches. He's so great at off-speed pitches. That's how he's going to beat you. Soft contact, that's how he's going to get you. So I think that when you look at the way that he pitches, I'm not too concerned about what he'll be a month from now. I think he'll be better than he is right now a month from now. So it's a good sign. Really, really good to see him go out there against, you know, the Diamondbacks. They have a great record. Not a great record, but a good record. And he just went out there and he did his job outside of that one mistake that he made. So good to see that.
Yeah, and you have to remember, Ranger Suarez is used to pitching in the playoffs, right? I mean, his career in Philly, he certainly got his handful of that. So if there's anyone who knows kind of how to ramp himself up and how to prepare himself for the long haul for being able to pitch in October, it would be Ranger Suarez. So, yeah, and, you know, this Diamondbacks lineup, you know, no Ketel Marte, that whole weird controversy, whatever's going on with him. So Red Sox catch a big break there that happens, you know, when they decide to come to Boston. No Gurriel in the lineup, although he's had a very down year. He's been kind of hurt pretty much most of the season. But they, you know, they still have some plucky hitters in there. Corbin Carroll, even though that average is down, he still can cause a lot of havoc. So, you know, to do that against this kind of lineup Diamondbacks are not completely out of it yet. They're still pushing for a wild card spot. So, yeah, I thought it was encouraging. This is the kind of performance you wanted to see from a team that, again, is playoff caliber. Whether or not Arizona makes it at the end, we'll see. You know, it's very competitive over there, but they are a challenge.
And to that point, Jason, I mean, I always like to say this. If you were to bring this up in conversation, like, did you think the Boston Red Sox were going to win the series against the Diamondbacks after losing three consecutive series? Not many would have said that they thought the Red Sox would win this series. So I always go back to that. I mean, we can talk about, well, they were without Ketel Marte and they're depleted a bit. Not many were picking the Red Sox to win anyways. So they just went out there and they did their job. They took the series, and hopefully this is something that kind of gets them back in the right direction in winning series. And we'll talk about their opponents a little bit later on. But yeah, I'm just happy to see them win this series and get back on to what was working the last month and a half.
Yeah, you're right. I had sweep all the way, but you know, that's just me.
I like that.
Of course you did. Yeah. We'd expect nothing less. But yeah, I mean, and I think the biggest story from tonight was, once again, the offense produced a lot of runs, right? They scored 11 last night. Now they go out and score 9 tonight against Merrill Kelly, who, you know, is kind of an up and down kind of year. But I think the most important stat that you look at from the last two nights is the strikeouts. They didn't strike out at all last night, and then only 3 strikeouts tonight. 13 hits, 6 walks, 9 runs, only 3 Ks. So the offense is kind of showing you something here of, you know, the mix they have right now. It's, you know, it's a little bit of a weird mix. Guys like Nick Sogard hitting leadoff, which I don't think any of us expected at this time of year, you know, when the season began. Mickey Gasper getting called back up. And look, I think a lot of people, and I'm guilty of this too, you know, Yoshida goes on the IL. Gasper is the first body up. And I'm kind of like, okay, 100%. do we have to do the Mickey Gasper thing again? Like, all right, fine. And of course, what does he do? Goes out there, hits a bomb, drives in a couple of runs, like makes me look like a complete idiot. So welcome back, Mickey Gasper. But yeah, the offense just continues to do their thing. And it's a lot of just putting the bat on ball, bunting guys over, and not striking out. I think that's really the key to what makes this offense go.
Yeah, definitely. I know Terry's raising his eyebrows maybe at these strikeouts, but it's just they're putting together good at-bats, and they're, you know, putting together long at-bats. They're working the count. Even Seydan is trying to. You know, Seydan works an at-bat because he swings that junk and then watches pitches go down the middle. So it's like, you know, he finds his spots to work at-bats, but they're finding ball. I mean, everyone had a hit again tonight. I think maybe Monasterio, but I think he had a sacrifice maybe or something. But you know, it's just they're finding, you know, they're finding their pitches, they're working counts, they're working 3-1 counts and finding their pitch. Mickey Gasper, back to back nights, home runs, but bombed a straightaway center. You know, so it's great to see everyone's rolling. I mean, I think tonight, you know, was definitely about the offense, but I also think it was about Adley, a lot about Adley. You know, he really showed out tonight, big home run. Another big RBI hit, great behind the plate, a couple great plays behind the plate tonight. And it was good to see him, you know, finally fit in with the team, you know, feel like a part of the team and have his moment at Fenway. And, you know, he wrapped that one around the pole and, you know, the crowd let him hear it. And it was great to see him, you know, maybe that will help him get kickstarted a little bit and he'll start to get hot.
Yeah, the Red Sox just needed to come back home. I think that was the biggest thing. I mean, in the last 25 games, that they're 19-6, you know, so that they have figured out a way to play better at home. And I think I remember maybe 2 weeks ago, I talked about how they were essentially abusing that green monster. It was double after double after double. And for some of these guys like Atlee, who had a pretty rough start with the Red Sox, for him to come back home and have the type of game that he had today, I mean, this is going to be good for them. It's going to be good for them. Take care of the Diamondbacks tomorrow. Finish the sweep. Then you have the Giants, who aren't good either. So go out there and beat these teams that you should be beating. And you're at home, right? So you can use the excuse of, well, we were away. We're trying to figure things out. We have new players. Now you're at home. You're winning. Just keep the winning streak going, right? Keep winning series and try to close the gap. Not with the Yankees, because you're only two and a half games behind them, but try your best to close the gap with the Rays, right? See what you can do in this next month and a half and see if you can catch up to them. But good sign.
Yeah, it's good to win a series again, just to get back into that. And Randy said no hits for Abreu, so maybe not everyone got a hit, but you know, it was, the lineup was definitely working tonight.
Yeah, Abreu was the only one without a hit, which is, you know, rare, right? Usually he's at least good for one. Great sign. And I think for Adley Rutschman, he needed a game like this because, you know, as usual in this town, the sports radio was all over him, you know, revisiting the trade and calling the trade deadline a failure because, oh, he's only 1-for-17 since joining the Red Sox. Well, here you go. When Adley Rutschman is healthy and he's on, this is the kind of stat line you look at on most nights, right? Two hits, his first Fenway Park home run. And, you know, that home run, that at bat, I really liked how Adley kind of baited Merrill Kelly into that because Kelly threw him two high fastballs to start the at bat, and Adley chased one of them. And then he kind of took a step back, took a timeout, took a step out of the box, and it was almost like he knew. He's like, he's going to throw me another one. He thinks that he's going to get this by me. He thinks I can't catch it. And sure enough, Merrill Kelly throws him another high fastball, and Rutschman crushes it, wraps around that foul pole. So I think that's the kind of hitter that he is. He's a bit more of a methodical hitter than most guys, but that's exactly the kind of night you can expect, right? Two hits, a couple of RBIs, a walk, and no strikeouts. So this guy was just getting on base, driving people in, and kind of showing you, like, yeah, this is the guy they traded for. Now it's one night, so, you know, let's not get too excited. He could go, you know, 0 for his next 15, right? Because he's had kind of a streaky year. But if he's finally healthy and he's starting to really settle in, because again, like going from playing for the Orioles to playing at Fenway every night is a much different experience. All due respect to Camden Yards and Orioles fans, but you know, playing at Fenway Park is a whole new monster, especially on a nightly basis. So if he can start to get comfortable with that and really start to settle in, I think you're going to see good things coming from Adley Rutschman going forward.
I think having him behind the plate is big too.
Yeah, his defense is exactly as advertised. I mean, you look at his Savant page and the defense is off the charts, right? So we knew he was a good defensive catcher coming in. That's always been the thing for his career, like, you know, some down offensive years, but defensively behind the plate, he is lauded for that. And I agree. I think you're starting to see that pitchers are very comfortable with him and he is making a big difference back there. So another thing that was kind of a positive from tonight, kind of off the major league field, but Roman Anthony making his first start down in AA. I don't have his total stat line, but I know that Juan, you said earlier that he drew a walk his first at bat. And then, of course, the clip that, you know, went viral across Red Sox Twitter, he hit his first home run. It was an absolute blast. It was a Roman Anthony classic. So that kind of raises some eyebrows because, you know, it feels like a week ago, a week and a half ago, he was just barely getting to like machine hitting. Now all of a sudden he's in a AA lineup and he's crushing it. And it does beg the question, you know, Yoshida's down now and sounds like he might be done for the year. Unfortunately, sounds like that was a really bad, hamstring strain. So Anthony's coming back at some point and, you know, everyone sort of says, well, with Yoshida down, Duran, he'll just take over the DH spot. I'm not sure that might be the best move. I mean, aren't there other guys that you would rather see plugged into that DH spot? Because I'm sorry, like, as good as the offense has been, you know, the last two nights, Duran, not really a big part of it. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Who would you rather see kind of take that DH spot once Anthony is back?
You can go on.
I'm not on the side of wanting to plug Roman Anthony right back into left field. I would DH him. I mean, what I want is his bat. That's what I need more than anything else. I think that defensively, while I have many criticisms of Jaron Duran, and I hope that during the offseason, the Red Sox figure out a way to get to, you know, trade him somewhere else, try to get whatever you can for him. Defensively, both, not both, but all three of them, whether it's Duran, Rafaela, and William Abreu out there. That's really what I want. And I want to conserve Roman Anthony for his back, because that's what we're going to need. So as he makes his way back, I'm still going to stick with Duran in left field and just DH Roman Anthony every single day. Yoshida's no longer there, so there's no longer that excuse of, well, you need to get Yoshida at bats. No, he's not here anymore. He's probably done for the year. So Roman Anthony, the DH spot is yours. This is yours until you feel like you're up to speed to go out there and play some defense, right? Because obviously he probably wants to play left field. We can throw you out there. But for now, for the foreseeable future, you're the DH every single game unless we need to rest you. That's the approach that I would take with Roman Anthony.
Yeah, I agree. I think at first when you bring him up, you start him at DH. And then I think maybe you slowly start to get him into left field and see what else you have at DH. Because, if we can get into the playoffs with Duran, you know, not in the lineup and the lineup still producing, might be the best route for our team right now, the way he's hitting. I just don't know. You know, obviously Mickey, you can't really count on saying Mickey would be a better DH or, you know, Connor Wong. But I said last night, you know, what I really want to see out of Roman is looking like a big leaguer in the double A game, right? So he did that. So, you know, that's a great sign for me. You know, he hit an absolute bomb. I think that can show that maybe you do rush him back a little quicker. You know, maybe you zip him through quicker and say, all right, just, you know, you're a big leaguer. You know how to hit. And, you know, you got to come hit at a big league level because we need you. And I would start him at DH, but when there's other guys to fit the DH spot, I would play him in left over Duran in those games.
Yeah, so it's about to get pretty tricky because it's not just Roman Anthony that's on his way back. There's a big strikeout machine albatross that is also his way back. And his name is Trevor Story. So Story has started to have his rehab assignments and he's starting to get into games. And he said the other day, I don't know if this was yesterday or earlier today, that he said, well, you know, I've been through this so many times where I know when I'm ready. So Story's basically telling you, like, yeah, I feel ready. So, you know, he's kind of putting pressure on, sounds like he's putting pressure on the organization saying, yeah, I don't need many rehab games. Like, I want to be activated. I want to go back to shortstop. So the issue with that is obviously this is not 2025 Trevor Story, who was a 25 homer, 25 stolen base guy who, you know, still struck out a fair amount, but at least produced. He wasn't doing anything before he got hurt. He was just striking out and giving you bad at bats. And yeah, the defense was fine at shortstop, but you know, again, that arm is not a shortstop's arm anymore. So there were still a lot of skips to first base that, you know, had to be dug out. And Andrew Monasterio is giving you a lot at the plate right now. Defensively, he has his shortcomings as a shortstop. It's not his natural position, but that is one thing that's going to be tricky is that Trevor Story is going to storm his way back into the lineup, meaning Monasterio is probably going to have to sit. And then, you know, like you guys said, if Anthony comes back, I agree. They probably want to DH him to start, which means you got to put Duran in left because Monasterio can't play left. Nick Sogard's not going to play left. So it's going to get tricky with the roster because right now I'm not telling you that Nick Sogard is, you know, the savior of the offense right now. I'm certainly not telling you that Mickey Gasper is either, despite what he's done the last two games. But those guys put the bat on the ball. They make contact. They you know, they'll even ground out to move the runner over. Like, even small things like that make such a difference for this offense. Trevor Story's just going to strike out three times a game. That's all he's going to do. And same with Jaron Duran, right? Duran's probably just going to strike out three times a game. He might be able to leg out an infield single, but then for some reason, he won't try and steal second base because he's, I guess, done stealing bases now at this point in his career. So they're going to run into a real problem where you're going to have to be forced to sit a guy like Monasterio, who has a really hot bat in the second half. just to put Trevor Story in there because he demands it for some, you know, and the front office demands it because of his contract. So I guess what I'm asking is, if Story and Anthony both come back, is there a situation where they look at Durant and they say, you know what, like, we got to put Monasterio in there over you, or we got to put Sogard in there over you at some point, because this team needs guys who put the bat on the ball. They need less strikeouts. And I just feel like you're forced with Trevor Story, but can you at least cut out one of those guys? It's just going to get really tricky when both those guys are ready to come back.
Yeah, I mean, it should at least be a discussion at the very least.
Yeah, this is going to be Chad Tracy's real test here, because all throughout the beginning of the season, all we heard was Trevor Story is Alex Cora's guy. Well, Alex Cora is in love with Trevor Story. He doesn't want to bench him. He doesn't want to start Marcelo Meyer in shortstop because Trevor Story's here. Well, Alex Cora is no longer here. Chad Tracy, you're the guy. And I agree with you, Jason. Like, Monasterio has earned the right. And I tweeted this maybe about a month ago or so. I tweeted, Monasterio has earned the right to be the everyday shortstop for this team. He's not a superstar. He's not even a star. But guess what? He plays hard. He plays smart. He may not be the best defensive shortstop, or even, you want to say, an average of defensive shortstop, but he plays the game smart. And he's given you everything since he has been put at that shortstop position. Trevor Story can't come over here and tell the team, well, guess what? I'm the star shortstop here. You need to start me. No, because prior to your injury, you sucked, dude. Like, so you have to earn it. You earn your way to being the everyday shortstop. And Chad Tracy's going to have to essentially put his foot down and do the complete opposite of what Alex Cora did. No, we're winning with the guys that are on the field right now. Yes, I want you to contribute, but you're going to have to work your way to being the everyday shortstop that you were at some point in your career or even last year. This is not the same team anymore. This is not the same motto anymore. Since we've been winning with guys that are unselfish, that are not, that are willing to sit down and let the other guy step up. That's the type of team that we have right now. And if you can't fit that model, then guess what? I won't play him. I just won't.
I think they're going to start him. I just hope they have the balls to pull him. You know, I hope they have the, I just, because I do feel like when he comes back, they will play him. I just hope they, you know, they actually have what it takes to bench him if it gets to that point. If he is the same as he was, you know, early in the season, if he's striking out, if he's not playing defense, I hope they can be able to sit down and say, all right, this isn't working. We have to go back. We have to bench him. I hope that they have that at least, because I do think he will be starting.
Yeah, it's really hard because I agree, you guys, like, this should be Chad Tracy's kind of moment to take the reins and say, okay, you know what? This lineup I've been putting out here, yeah, it looks a little weird, but it's working. We're scoring runs, okay? Now, the Pittsburgh series, you know, that didn't look great, but they come back home, they're scoring runs again. They're putting the bat on the ball. The problem is, how much pull does Tracy really have in that department? Because he still has the intern tag on him. So they're still kind of treating him more as like the steward of the lineup. I still, you know, and I think he has some influence, obviously, but does he have influence when it comes to a guy making $23.5 million who's coming off the IL and is, you know, a veteran and is supposedly well respected and is saying that, hey, I'm healthy and I want to start? So I don't know if he's able to really do much against that. So I agree. I think Story's going to get his job back. I think that's just the nature of the business, right? The guy with the highest contract is going to get the deference, right? Unless you're Anthony Rendon and you legit just can't play anymore. You're going to get that job. So Doug, you mentioned it. You hope they have the guts to pull him. I just worry, like, what does that look like? Like, pull him when he goes 1 for 28, or, you know, like, are they willing to do it if he goes like 2 for 16 and he's just striking out and looking awful? Like, the problem is, I feel like they're going to give him such a long runway.
Yeah.
And I just feel like the Red Sox might drop more games than they should just because they're going to let Trevor Story go 3 for 36 before they finally say, okay, we gave you a shot, but now we really got to sit you because you're just a black hole in the lineup. Like, That's my concern because
yeah, no, I agree.
Because look, they're in a good position right now in the wild card, right? They're still five up on Baltimore, something like that.
Yeah.
So they're in a good position. They got the Blue Jays and Rangers chasing them, but I don't believe in those teams to really go on a run. I don't even believe in Baltimore to go on a run. So they're in a good spot. They're not really in jeopardy of just dropping out of the race. But what happens if Story comes back, he goes in a slump, and you know it throws off the offense, and all of a sudden you get, you know, you look up, it's whatever, Labor Day weekend, and the Red Sox only have 2.5 games up on Baltimore, and they're starting to slip further and further back in that wild card. Like, at that point, do they pull him? I mean, that's where it gets a little scary on my end.
I mean, why not just platoon him at second base? You know, you're throwing Siegler out there. Platoon him with Siegler just to get him, you know, get him some reps, essentially, in Major League Baseball. He hasn't played in a while. So, to me, it's just unfair to say, Monasterio, thank you for your service. You've played great, at least, you know, for what we've asked you to do or expected you to do. Thank you for your service. Goodbye. No, that's not okay. And it goes against everything that this team stands for today, right? I'm not talking about earlier in the year. I'm talking about today, the Chat Tracy Red Sox. They're a type of team that you have players like Caleb Durbin say, well, guess what? I'll move to second base if I have to move to second base to bring in a third baseman. Those are the types of guys that are out there right now. You know what I'm saying? So, like, if you want to continue this momentum that you have going, right, you're playing winning baseball, and the players that you're bringing on, they have to have that same mentality. I'll do whatever this team needs me to do. You want me to DH? I'll DH. You want me to mentor the young guys? I'll mentor them. I'll get until I'm back to the point where I feel comfortable enough to play, you know, really good baseball to my standards. I just hope, as you said, Doug, that Chat Tracy has the guts to say, listen, maybe a game or two, and if it's not working, I'm going back to what was working, instead of just letting it ride out for a month and things kind of crumbling down. I just hope it doesn't get to that point.
I think it has to be that way. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And look, it's going to be, a lot of it's going to be on the organization, but it's going to be on Trevor Story too. Again, this is a guy who I think kind of prides himself on being a leader, being a veteran who, you know, it, like you said, is willing to do whatever it takes to help the team win. He's played second base for the Red Sox before. He did it when he first got here. So if he's not willing to go to second base, or, you know, at the very least, if he comes back and it's just all shortstop with, you know, a mix of Sogard and Siegler at second and Monasterio's just glued to the bench, then I don't know if the media will ask it, but I think we'll start asking the question, like, is Trevor Story demanding that he play shortstop and just not willing to give on that and not willing to play second base? And even if that's not the case, the question's probably going to be asked. So I think it has to be that way. I think if Story comes back, you got to sit him down and go, look, you know, we know that you're a shortstop. We know you want to play shortstop, but Monasterio's hot right now. He's playing lights out over there, and especially with the bat, right? Again, defensively, he does leave something to be desired, but offensively, we can't take his bat out of the lineup. He's too good right now. So you've got to play second base. And, you know, it might be a little bit of a platoon to start until we're ready to get you up to speed, something like that. I think it's got to be the case because he's missed too much time. And look, I know the injuries aren't always his fault, and you know it's frustrating. It is what it is. But you got to look at it before the injury and go, dude, you weren't productive. As Juan said, you sucked before you got hurt. So you don't have a leg to stand on here. Right now, we've got a shortstop who's swinging a hot bat. So second base is a bit of a rotating door. So you know what? We'll put you in that rotation. And like you said, you got to earn that spot, because just because you make almost $24 million and you're a veteran does not mean that we have to completely change our hitting philosophy to give you your old job back. So that's what I'm hoping happens. I hope that it's, yeah, Story gets activated because he's kind of eager to go, but he's willing to play second base and willing to keep Monasterio on the lineup.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed.
So we'll see what happens. Again, I feel like a Story activation is imminent at this point. I just feel like he's chomping at the bit. Roman Anthony, at least he's gotten into a game. We'll see how quickly they kind of accelerate him. I don't know if they're going to do like couple of games in Double A, a couple of games in Worcester, and then bring him up, or just say, you know what, he's healthy, bring him right up. I don't know what the plan is there, but either way, both guys are on their way back, and we'll see what the lineup looks like when they do. But for now, we're going to stick with the lineup we got, and we're going to stick with hopefully some winning baseball. So we've got the series finale tomorrow afternoon, a 4:10 start. It's going to be Brandon Pfaadt for the Diamondbacks against Peyton Tolley, who has just been lights out lately for the Red Sox. Brandon Pfaadt has been very good for Arizona, though. Back-to-back shutout performances for him that he's coming off. So good pitching matchup tomorrow afternoon. So, Doug, I'll start with you. Who do you got?
Oh, yeah, I got the Sox all the way. Peyton Tolley on the mound with a chance to sweep. You know, I think he, you know, is the type of guy that likes a spot like that. You know, the ball's in his hand for a sweep, and he's going to go out and he's going to shove. And there's no reason to think the offense can't keep it rolling against the team. Pfaadt is good. But this just feels – I said it last night, you know, I thought game one would be the toughest game. And after we got that, I said Ranger and Tolley taking the mound, you know, the sweep feels imminent, and I feel good about it.
One.
Yeah, I mentioned the record at home already. They're playing great baseball at home. Peyton Tolley has been phenomenal. Like, he's our star pitcher of the future. And why not trust him to go out there and just finish off the sweep? There's some weird vibes with the Diamondbacks right now, especially with that Ketel Marte news. So they probably going through it right now. They're not at home. They're probably just wanting to go right back to their home field. We're home. We have Peyton Tolley out there. The vibes are back to where it should be. I think the Boston Red Sox finish off the sweep tomorrow before we have a friendly face over the weekend in Rafael Devers.
Yeah, I agree. I'm taking the Red Sox tomorrow. It's just all the positivity is on the Red Sox side, right? And, you know, you got an afternoon game tomorrow, 85 and sunny, so it's going to be tarps off in the stands. You know, Tolley's going to be pumped up for that one. You know, just like you said, opposite vibes for the Diamondbacks with the whole Ketel Marte situation and, you know, the manager, you know, crying on live TV about it. It's just kind of not going their way right now. You know, and I think also just Fenway is a good place to be right now. I think they once again broke the Jimmy Fund record tonight. So everything's just trending upwards for this team right now. And I think Tolley's going to take the mound. He's a guy who pitches with emotion. I think he's going to absolutely shove tomorrow against a kind of depleted Arizona lineup. So I'm also going to take the Sox as well. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Let's hope we're right. Let's hope we're right. And we will be back on the air tomorrow night, sometime after the game, may not be immediately afterwards, but we'll see. It'll be